Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The Balance, the only sports talk show that gives a well-balanced diet of sports. Host Tom Marquis and the gang are ready to break down this week in sports. This is the one place where fanatics can come together and talk about their favorite teams. The Balance brings you an analytical breakdown of sports from a fan's point of view. So sit back and get ready. It's time for The Balance.
Fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
All right, my minions, it's Sunday. That's right, it's that time of the week when we talk racing, all racing for the next hour right here on the Balance Radio Network. My name's Tom Marquis, El Presidente. So glad that you could take time out of your Sunday afternoon to join us. We're running just a tad bit behind today, but that's okay. We got Cliff, Kenny, and the guys all standing by in the wings, ready to talk with you about everything that goes fast. I'll tell you what, I always enjoy having them here on The Balance every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. We break everything down, and as you know, we talked about yesterday, Tony George resigning from Hallman & Company in his attempts to purchase IndyCar, and you know, what are your thoughts on that? We talked about that in great detail. But did you get a chance to check out those Indianapolis coats? That's right. Andrew Luck gave Indianapolis coach Pagano another reason to celebrate. Coach Strong, as we like to say here in Indianapolis, just hours after Pagano was sent home from the hospital, Luck became the first Colts quarterback to run for two touchdowns in a game since 1988. As Indianapolis put away Cleveland 17-13. Now, you know, when you look at some of the comparisons done between Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck, I tell you what, that's one of the things that Peyton Manning didn't do. And as I was talking about with Michelle, our social media director this afternoon, you know, when he ran, he just kind of looked like Frankenstein's monster running down there. So, you know, hey, hats off to the Indianapolis coach, interim coach Bruce Arians. You got to look at, you know, hey, this is a pretty big shoes to fill. What's going on? And obviously, you know, Pagano cheering right along. Yeah, and in the words of Bruce Arians, Pagano was at the house, and we're really excited about that, Arians said. Pagano, who is undergoing treatment for leukemia, that's probably as big as a win today. I'm sure he's feeling right now. Oh, and you know, the victory came in typical Pagano style. Indy's 3-3 controlled the ball for more than 35 minutes and ran for a high of 148 yards, held Cleveland to 55 yards on the ground, and finished with two stops in Colts territory before finally forcing the last man with the ball out of bounds on final play. I tell you what, those Indianapolis Colts, a lot of people, and I'm hearing them and I'm talking around the national media, Andrew Luck, possible playoffs. If we get to the playoffs this season, I would be remarkably amazed. But Cleveland Browns did fall today. The Colts have one more win than they had all last season. And that, my friends, is something to celebrate here in Indianapolis. Well, I know you tuned in to talk some racing, and that's exactly what we're going to do. You know, and so we're going to get to Cliff, Kenny, and you know, what's coming down the pike and all the things going on with racing. Remember, guys, follow us on our Facebook, The Balance, and on the Indy Pro Sports, IndyProSports.com, as well as our Twitter, T-Balance and Pro Indy, guys. And every Saturday morning, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. right here, Eastern Time on the Balance Radio Network, we give you a full balance of sports. Well, guys, without further ado, we're going to get you to this week's Speed Talk, and we're going to break down what's going on with the guys over at Radio Speed Talk. And hopefully, you know, we'll see what's going on. We're going to take a break. We'll get back. We'll go right into it.
It's time for Speed Talk. With host Cliff Tanner.
You have a beautiful speaking voice.
I'm special and you're not.
from AMA to IRL and NHRA.
Sorry, gentlemen, I'm not a fan of that.
Even NASCAR.
Ooh, I'm ready for NASCAR.
In-person interviews and giveaways.
Incredible talent, incredible variety, like never seen on any other show before.
Along with the ride, as always, is Kenny Bard.
He's our Joe Biden.
You can always visit the gang at RadioSpeedTalk.com.
Hey, hey, race fans, we're back at you. Speed Talk got Tiny behind the boards. Kenny Bard with me. I'm Cliff Tanner. And don't forget, you can check us out at RadioSpeedTalk.com. You can also go to Facebook.com/RadioSpeedTalk and catch Kenny at, on Twitter.
Yeah, where? Kenny Bar 52.
And I'll be Radio Speed Talk too, and nobody else wants to do it so far, and hey, who cares? I'll tell you, that's a crazy thing to watch during a race and presidential debates, I found out in the last couple of weeks. But just a lot of exciting things going on, man. I guess we're going to talk about a few things. One of them is dominance doesn't always pay off, number one.
True.
Number two, head injuries are getting crazy.
And
we'll talk about that.
The attention they're getting should be that and more, probably.
Some surprising things said from one of the, I guess, most respected racers around, too, on a program that you had me switch to. We'll talk about that a little bit.
I wasn't surprised.
I was kind of surprised by some of what he said.
There's a lot of knuckleheads in race cars.
But he turned around and said different things on Twitter. Yeah.
Well, his PR guy got a hold of him.
We also had a chance to go down to Winchester, as we talked about last week. We're going to talk about that, where we saw a mini Talladega happen in turn one, and it literally was a mini Talladega.
Yeah.
It was crazy.
Everybody just about cried when that happened upstairs. Man, oh, man.
Considering you've got three wreckers and having to pull off 10 cars, and I could understand why that's a headache right off the bat, but we'll talk about that. And also a little bit about what happened the race the next day, and did they cheat or did they not? Kenny and I will talk about that, and I'm sure we're going to argue about that as well.
Probably.
And he's going
to
let us know exactly
the other
what
side
that part is, because I've never heard of it, so we'll talk about that.
Okay, sure.
Well, we'll start with NASCAR. Race number five was in the books. Really, wasn't a great race to me. Wasn't a lot of fun, you know, and again, I had to tape it because we were down in Winchester for that long rain delay. But I saw it, and Keselowski, Paul Wolff, I tell you what, Paul Wolff has got to be one of the most creative crew chiefs I've ever seen, other than Chad Knaus. Paul Wolff's never been cited for anything yet. But, man, he's daring to make that guy get in the lead and win. But he led most of the laps, and where does he go? 11th. Cuts his lead in half.
Well, the Keselowski crew usually outsmarts everybody, and they didn't run their gas mileage strategy just right this time. And that's the first time in a long time they haven't done that. But he didn't lose a bunch of points. He only lost half of them, you know.
Right.
They have said in the past that they will not go to the edge of the rules, so they don't have to worry about the templates and stuff and having to worry about, what they call that, a C post or an A pillar or something
way back
mm-hmm. then having a little bit of a dent in it and giving an aerodynamic advantage. They claim they don't do that. I don't believe them in one little bitty bit. If you're not on the very edge of the rules, you're not running up front. You're not leading the points in NASCAR. They just found a better way to do it, a little bit better mousetrap, so to speak.
Right. The thing was, though, the number two car has always, a lot this year, been able to squeeze that gas to go farther than anybody else. And he played a little bit of a game to get up front. He got to stay up front because of some cautions and things like that. But the thing about that is, that's what killed him. He went out one lap too long, ran out of gas as he was going down that pit road, and he just basically couldn't make it. And then here comes Denny and Jimmy. And boom, there it is.
Yeah, and you know, that the gas mileage thing isn't an exact science anyway.
Sure.
And you know how I feel about gas mileage races.
Well, nobody likes them, you got to face
it's back to life, you know, and it's going to happen half a dozen times every year. And they just miscalculated by, what, that's a mile and a half track.
Right.
So you miscalculated by a cup and a half of fuel, two cups of fuel maybe, somewhere in that neighborhood, enough to get you around and get you into the pits again.
Well, you know, and they always talk about how Jimmy Johnson is a master of the bigger tracks, from 1.5 to 2.5. And, you know, I mean, he's been good at just about everywhere except Michigan, and mm-hmm. he's always lost because of fuel mileage.
Yeah, because everybody
runs away.
Yeah.
This time he comes out, him and Denny Hamlin pretty much on the same program. Hamlin comes in second. Johnson comes in third. And we'll go over the points here. He did cut it in half. Clint Bowyer running pretty much around 8 to 12 all day long comes up with a victory.
Well, they squeezed horsepower and mileage out of that Toyota this week. Don't know how. Don't know why. Maybe toward the end of the show we'll talk about Smokey Unic and some of the sneaky things he did with fuel. I've been reading up on him, one of my favorite all-time mechanics from way back in the 60s. And, yeah, Boyer's right in the thick of things. He's only 28 points out. You can't write him out. I'm still going to go by my credo of last week. We're going to go 10 points a race, so anybody within 50 still has a solid mathematical chance, I think. Although 49 is quite a stretch, and 43 begins to, you start thinking after five races because you still got Truex is seventh with 49 out, so he's still got six guys to jump over. Mathematically, he's there, but the challenge is everybody else having a lousy race. And so far, they've been staying up there pretty well. You know, Johnson hasn't had a bad race, Hamlin sort of, Bowyer sort of, Kane sort of, but not bad. You know? They haven't turned in a 43rd or a 38th or something, and picked up a grand total of 6 points all day. So anything can happen, but it's starting to look like a five-horse race here.
And it is. And here's the cool thing that I like, and I know you won't like this much. Kyle Busch, all of a sudden he doesn't make the chase because of a stupid call, but he's been running pretty doggone good.
Hmm.
That's all you got to say about that? Why can't you give a man kudos when he's a good when he's doing well?
Because he's a jerk.
No, he may be a jerk, but he's a driving jerk.
Well, you know, I got mechanics that are good mechanics, and I don't like them either, you know. So, well, I shouldn't say that, but I wish their personalities were a whole lot different.
True. I'll give you that.
Where'd he finish Sunday?
Fifth.
No, Sunday, not Saturday night. Sunday, down at Winchester.
Well, come on now. You can't blame that on him.
No,
that was
the
car's fault.
He got caught up in a crash early.
Yeah, he was nothing he could do.
He didn't
do.
Make 10 laps.
Yeah,
he was
at Winchester, ladies and gentlemen. So, but I'm still impressed with Michael Waltrip Racing. Still got two guys in the top 10 in points, or finished in the top 10 here. Martin Truex just can't seem to get over the hump, but Clint Bowyer's kind of like right there, then he's not. Then he's right there, then he's not. But here he is, wins his second race.
Yeah, people got to remember where they were last year. They were what some people would call a second-tier team last year, and they basically threw out the playbook, started all over, and brought in some other fresh idea men and did real well. And look at the dividends it's paying off. It's doing very, very well. I'm very impressed with Michael Waltrip Racing. I wish they weren't racing them Toyotas, but
yeah, well,
but still, they're getting
it
done. Yeah, I know.
They're the ones throwing out the most money right now, you know what I'm saying?
So. Yeah, and research and development, which is why their engines are so doggone good right now.
Right. Well, unless you're Kyle Busch, his weren't so great all year. But
they push the envelope a little bit, you know, and they have to. And they got to find out where the limits are, what they can do, what they can't do, because it seems like every year these motors get a little bit better and a little bit better and a little bit better. And it's not because of assembly-wise or oils or anything. It's just the way they're putting pieces together, what they're making them out of, the clearances and the tolerances that are built into the engines. The way the CNC machines cut the blocks and the heads and how they breathe and how they flow and where the coolant ports are, and I'm getting too technical and blah, blah, blah. But that all counts. That all has a factor in the dependability of a motor and how much horsepower it makes and what kind of fuel you're going to burn in it and what kind of combustion chamber shapes you're going to have in the heads. If you're going to run E85, you're going to run E15, what are you going to do with that? And they're experimenting with all of it in the R&D side of it. So when it's time to build the motors, they know what they want to do with it.
Well, let's talk about the teams that kind of made some switches over in the last couple of, well, I guess a few days, not a couple of days. Kurt Busch finishes 21st over in the Furniture Row. You got A.J. Allmendinger comes back his first race since his suspension. He goes 24th. But the kid, I feel sorry, Reagan Smith, started in 26th, got all the way up to 10th. Boom, motor's gone.
Yeah. You got to pull for him. Positively have to pull for him, and we are. And when a mechanical piece breaks like that, there's not a whole lot you can do about it. And that's probably one of them other things that they, since they know that car's not in the chase, it makes, let's not call it a conspiracy theorist, but makes guys like me wonder if they're trying a little bit something different with that motor. And if it works, they'll do the same thing to something for Jimmy Johnson and Jeff Gordon. You know, just to eke out two or three or four more horsepower. Eke out a little bit better dependability, because when they take their motors out, they tear them apart and look at them all the time. Which is why I don't understand the stupid burnouts at the end of a race. I would think that the R&D guys would wish they would never do that, because they're out there revving that motor up to God knows what RPMs and spinning around and doing stupid stuff. And if I was the R&D guy, or if I was the team owner, I wouldn't let them do that stuff. I'd tell them, hey, look, we need to take that motor out, take it apart, and see where we can improve
on
it.
Do you think they care? They just won a few $100,000 and you win one or two races a year, unless you're a Jimmy Johnson or a Tony Stewart or somebody like that. So what?
Obviously, they don't care, but I would.
No, I agree with you. You know, but we're also not Hendricks, who's got a gazillion dollars, or Childers, who's got a gazillion dollars.
But did you notice who didn't do a burnout last week?
Who?
Boyer.
Yeah, he couldn't.
Yeah, I know, he's
out of gas. He had to get pushed from the start line all the way back to the
I was bit. Happy. I saw him pushing it. I thought, that's the way you're supposed to do this, fellas.
I agree. But, yeah, so let's talk. We got Kansas coming up. You're saying there's three or four guys still there. I still say Keselowski is still his to lose.
Yep.
You tell me.
Agreed. I think so. You know, it's another mile and a halfer. And Kansas is not a big wild card as Talladega, but it is a wild card because it's got a new surface on it. And that's where Dale Jr. crashed his car and got his bell rung, which we're going to talk about a little bit later, out there doing tire tests on that new surface and stuff. So every time they go to a new track with a new surface, they were all worried about Phoenix. They had tire blistering problems in Michigan. Now they're off to Kansas, which is a pretty high-speed mile and a halfer. So it's not a big wild card, but it's a wild card just the same.
Well, you got to give kudos to Goodyear, though. I mean, even though that they've gone to those tracks and blistered them up, they've always done very good at reacting, albeit, you know, they haven't had a lot of time to practice on these. But they've made them some pretty safe races as far as the tire itself is concerned.
Oh, yeah. Our friend Roger Curtis up at MIS witnessed his first Goodyear tire test this summer right before the Michigan race. With the Michigan 400, I think, the Pure Michigan 400. He said he was amazed at all the trinkets and gizmos and things that they actually hung on the car and hung on the rim and measured the tire sidewall rebound at 200 mile an hour, and they stayed on the car. He said they put an amazing amount of technical expertise in these things to make sure they work like they're supposed to work. The problem at Michigan was the temperature when they tested was 70. The temperature when they raced was 98. And it goofed them up.
Well, it's kind of hard to do. I mean, you know, I don't care who. Maybe we need to get Hoosier Tire back in NASCAR.
Yeah. Well, you know how I feel about that. You know, I'm all for an Indiana business.
Well,
anytime.
I totally agree. So we got about 30 seconds left of the segment. Tell me, what is a crew chief? Do they change their strategy at this point forward? Do you play it safe? Do you go for it? What do you do?
Well, you always race for points at this point, but you can't play it safe. You don't really race the racetrack. You race Jimmy Johnson, you race Denny Hamlin, you race Clint Boyer. If you can beat them, if you finish 12th, they finish 14th, you still win.
Right. Well, all right. Well, that's pretty simple.
Well, you didn't have much time.
All right, folks, we need to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk about bell ringing. You're listening to
Speed Talk Ding Dong.
All right, welcome back to Speed Talk. We've got Tiny back there making us sound good. Kenny Bart, Cliff Tanner coming at you. And as we're talking about, man, you hear a lot about this in the NFL. You hear it even a little bit when you're talking about other contact sports. But racing, all of a sudden, Dale Earnhardt Jr. gets one concussion, comes back within 4 weeks, has another concussion. I guess it's 6 weeks. And now all of a sudden, the sport's a buzz. Now, Kenny Barr, I ask you, is it because it's Dale Earnhardt Jr., or is this really a concern?
Both is the answer to that. Because it's Dale Earnhardt Jr., it's the sport's number one star, no matter what angle you look at it at. I mean, Junior Nation's huge, and he's got this gargantuan following that I heard it even affected ticket sales to a certain degree, or at least they think it did.
Yes.
You know, I've been reading up a little bit about this. And there's a guy named Dr. Stephen Olvey out of the University of Miami, I think it's America's foremost concussion expert. and he's credited with saving Alex Zanardi's life and several other racers he's helped through or got them so they didn't have big-time concussion problems down the road. And he even came out and said, you know, more racers need to come out and say something. They're tough. They're like hockey players. You know, you hold up two fingers and they say they see four, they throw them back out on the ice. They don't want to miss a trick. They don't want to miss a race. They don't want to do that because they're just – that's their mindset.
I understand that. And I want to talk about that a little bit more here in just a moment. But I want to ask you, you being a crew chief, you keep on top of that stuff. You've been in cars. My question is, with all the safety, everybody out there think, and this is for other people because I know what you're going to say, okay? At least I think I do. But for the people out there, you've got the Hans device, you've got everything else, you've got safety barriers, you've got things like that. First of all, how can you get a concussion when your neck don't move? But a lot of people also realize that you're still hitting a brick wall, whether it's a safer barrier or a cement wall, whether there's a safer barrier behind there or not.
Well, you're coming to a pretty sudden stop no matter what, and a lot of energy is absorbed by the safer wall stuff. But they haven't come up with a way to insulate the brain from the inside of the skull, and that's what moves
right.
and bangs inside the skull and bruises the brain and gives you a concussion. So I don't know that they're ever going to come up with a way to keep that from happening. Now, they need to come up with ways, and I'm sure science is working on this kind of stuff, of measuring how bad a concussion is, what part of the brain it's in, and I think MRIs can do that for you now, and how long it's going to take to heal, and that's going to vary from guy to guy to guy.
Well, you know, I mean, unfortunately, we've lost a lot of football players that are due to that. I mean, we just lost Alex Mongo Karras, who had dementia, which they say was caused by, you know, concussions. And I've had three of them myself, unfortunately. Only one was a sporting event, if you can call kickball a sporting event when I was in 12th grade.
It certainly is, my gosh.
But we're
going to call you a professional kickball athlete since you've had a concussion in that sport.
And I actually was going backwards to catch a ball and smacked into a brick wall, if you can believe that, the school building.
Did you make the catch?
Yes, I did.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, I don't remember much after that because I've seen 4,000 different little things flying in front of my face. But a lot of people don't realize that, you know, you hear things about migraines, and concussions are a lot like migraines. You hear people talk about them, they see the light, you know, there's things that interfere. Sometimes you can't even see your left hand moving around, even though you know it's moving around. Dangerously, I mean, obviously, danger-wise, obviously, when you're in a race car, that's going to affect a lot of people. Now, here's the thing. We were talking about wind tunnel earlier, and Jeff Gordon said that a racer should let somebody know.
Yep, right.
Okay.
Agreed.
2 hours later on Twitter, he says, I wouldn't tell anybody.
Well, and he also said he probably wouldn't told anybody himself either. And a lot of guys are going to have that mindset. And that's just that tough guy mindset that some people have. I mean, how many guys are just going to the doctor when they should go to the doctor because they've got indigestion and it really turns out to be a heart issue?
Right.
You know, just got this little pain right here and, oh, that'll go away. Give me a couple of antacids and I'll just live through it. And the next day they're not with us anymore. You know, I've had that happen in our life recently within the last month with some family and friends. Guys got to quit being so stinking tough and go get checked out. Maybe it's going to be something minor. But, you know, if things just don't compute fast or you're not your same self or you got that 1,000-yard stare suddenly and you don't know why, there's something wrong. There's some chemical imbalance or your concussion is reoccurring or coming back. I had a young son that had got two concussions, and we wouldn't let him play football anymore. And it tore me up because I'm a sports guy. Good
right.
heavens, I'd have been the guy announcing the starting quarterback kid as my own kid. That's pretty cool. You know, that's a big fat ego trip for the old man.
Right.
And we didn't let him play. And now I'm glad we didn't.
Well, here's my issue, and it's not really an issue with concussions. It's my issue with Dale Jr. He talks about Talladega because he got slammed pretty good, got knocked, you know, obviously further down the points. He was As far as I'm concerned, at that point, he was done anyway. But he talks about the race afterwards, saying what a cluster that whole thing is, and it's just pure craziness. And if they race like that every week, he wouldn't be raced. So, two things come into mind. Is he getting too scared? Is this the loser's limp? Or is he truly have a concussion that's really messing him up that bad? Or, you know, obviously there's been reports that Rick Hendrick is the one that came out and put a stop to him driving, not Dale Jr.
Well, I didn't read anything about Rick Hendrick and stuff doing that, but it's not a loser's limp. Heck no, he wants to win at least one, you know, and he's had the best year he's had in the last half dozen and stuff. He got his bell rung.
But he's
he got
out.
Bell rung pretty good.
He's out. When the guy's running for a touchdown, you can't catch him. All of a sudden, you got a calf pull. He's out of the race. Why not take a few weeks off and say? But my concern, I guess, with that, Kenny, is did Talladega really mess him up, or was it the concussion? Is he really scared to drive now?
No, it's concussion.
Is it, I mean, his dad died on a super speedway.
It's concussion.
Okay.
In my opinion, yeah. I don't think so. I don't think it's. I don't think he's got scared. I don't think he's got the boogums or whatever you want to call it. He's just he got his bell rung. He ain't thinking clear. You know, he's not the normal Dale that you normally see.
So what does NASCAR do at this point? I mean, obviously you're going to have to come in. You're going to have to say something, because I'm going to tell you. You know, when I have a migraine caused from a concussion and you try to drive, it's difficult because you don't know exactly where your distance is or anything like that. You're putting a lot of guys in danger. So what happens every time everybody has a bump in a wall or something? Do they immediately have to go into the in-care center, get tested for concussions? How's that all work now?
Yep, that's exactly what they do. F1 and some other big sanctioning body, I can't remember who, tests every driver before the season starts. So they get a baseline on their brain waves and activities and how things work and stuff. And any time you're in any kind of accident that may even begin to sort of kind of maybe think you got brain issues or concussion, you go get tested again or you're not going to be back on a racetrack. NASCAR has to institute something along those lines. I think that's a great place to start. And if you're a little bit loopy or a little bit stupid on Wednesday, you're not going to go racing. And that's just the way it is. There's too many lives at risk here to have a guy who's three quarters in the brain out there going 200 mile an hour, five deep, four wide, you know, or yeah, five rows deep, four wide. You just can't have it. You just can't have it.
Well, Dale Jr. is obviously he's going down out to Pittsburgh at the Pittsburgh Medical Center. Is going to see a neurosurgeon, Dr. Jerry Petty. No, I don't know if they're related. Don't
probably
have any
not.
Clue. Probably not. Going to get it checked out. Get a second opinion. But I guess, you know, I sit here and I look at this and I think of one other guy that ruined his racing career this year, whether he realizes it or not. But there's a lot of comparison here to Mike Conway from the IRL. Mike Conway, obviously, if anybody should be scared on driving a, you know, straight track, it's him, because he almost got killed in one. But he comes in here the last race of the year. He decides he can't drive it. He pulls out. Kind of feel... getting a little feel that maybe Dale's doing the same thing here. Does he hurt himself here?
Maybe, depending on how he tests out and how he does next spring. Yeah, the racing body is the Indy Racing League, by the way. It just came to me when you talked about Conway. I think Conway, if you know, Bobby Isaac did that weird thing many years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you wonder if that wasn't concussion related. You know, he
could
said
be.
He had people, the voices in his head said, Bobby, get off the racetrack. It's time to quit. And right in the middle of a race, he did. He just parked the car, got out. Who else? Freddie Lorenzen. His daughter now attributes his stubbornness from not getting any treatment for concussions from racing way back when to his complete dementia now. I think it's been going on for a long time. Science is just now catching up with it, and they're starting to understand what it is, why it is, how it is, and just how flaky guys are and how dangerous this thing could be.
Well, and I agree. It could be totally dangerous. And my question comes out to this point now then, if NASCAR is going to have to get involved, and I agree they do. They need to do something about this. And you know, but the biggest thing is I'm afraid they might go way reactionary and go the opposite way, and all of a sudden you're going to top the speeds out at 150, 140, 170. They're going to down the speed even more, and then you're killing yourself.
I don't think that matters. Look at the racing you see on a local level. The people are just as excited when two cars are going 120 mile an hour as they are 200 mile an hour if it's close racing and it's clean racing. Look at the modified race Saturday night.
Right.
Those people went absolutely nuts on that last lap pass, or when Nestor just got around Breedlove.
Breedlove, it was awesome.
The fans just went crazy. And I know they're not all Brian Nestor fans by any means. I don't think that you could have two cars out there racing 40 mile an hour. That's an extreme. But as long as they're close, competitive, and they're racing, fans are going to like it. And you can't see, and NASCAR can lie, you can't tell the difference between 180 and 200 mile an hour by the naked eye.
Well, no, you can't. I agree.
So just tell them they're going 200 and slow them down to 170. I mean,
Yeah, until you get people out there with speed guns going by.
Yeah, there's always going to be some quacko that figures me out. But, yeah, I slowing them down really doesn't bother me a bit.
Well, you know, we got a few minutes here, a couple minutes here. Tell me, what do you think NASCAR will do, or what do you think they could do to make it safer and prevent concussions? I don't think you ever can completely prevent
it. Well, you're not going to be able to prevent it, but I think they need to go to the F1 IRL model. I like to get the baseline on every driver that's going to compete that year. And if a guy is planning on a one-off or only driving this weekend, he's got to get tested before he gets in the car. You got to go to wherever, Pittsburgh or Miami or wherever the best gizmo testers are for your brain and get a baseline. So if you do get your bell rung, you can get tested again and cleared or not cleared. That's a great first step. And as science and technology and medicine get further advanced, and they understand these brain issues a little bit better, then they can take other steps to prevent guys from getting back in the car if they're not fully capable of doing so.
Well, I'm telling you, man, it's really a scary situation, and I'm still not sure how anybody can react or what anybody needs to do. Anyway, folks, we need to go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the Winchester weekend on Saturday and one of the longest things I've ever seen in my life. Yeah. All right, we'll be back.
Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated, located at 100 Gasoline Alley Suite D in Indianapolis, specializes in quality performance for your bike. A distributor for all major suppliers, we can do everything from service and motor work to customizations and insurance estimates. Give us a call at 317-247-8088. Fast Lane Cycles Incorporated at 317-247-8088.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. IndyProSports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sport.
199 left, and baby, it all comes down to this.
Your talk show for NASCAR.
Yeah, now that's what I'm talking about.
The Balance Online.
Fuel, give me fire, give me that which I desire.
Welcome back to Speed Talk. Kenny Barr, Cliff Tanner coming at you, Tiny behind the boards. And hey, don't forget RadioSpeedTalk.com, one place you can catch us. Also at Facebook.com/RadioSpeedTalk. And yes, we are keeping up with Speed Talk on a lot of stuff. And I've been blogging like crazy. And Kenny, I'm still trying to figure out how to get you one, but you can come on board and blog, man.
I know.
Well, then what are you waiting on?
I talk a lot here. I run out of ideas.
All right, I'll give you that much. But, Kenny, you can be found on Twitter.
Yep, KennyBar52.
Yeah, Radio Speed Talk 2 is where I'm at. And, hey, I've decided a policy. If Rush Limbaugh and everybody else can do it, you follow me, I'll follow you. Maybe neither one of us have nothing to say, but at least we're following each other.
Well, I follow you. I read what you do, and I did not text you and go, what do you mean by that? I didn't get that.
Yeah, you've sent me some pretty nasty ones back. No, I'm just kidding, folks.
We actually have
some pretty good conversations during race time during that, and I'm telling you, you ought to go to Twitter and sign up, because if you want to see some good commentating, look at all the idiots on there just talking. It's just pretty funny. But
a lot of strange wannabes with some interesting ideas. Once in a while, somebody hit a home run, though. So.
You know, and Kenny Wallace does that a lot on there. He's so hilarious. He cracks me up.
I read a guy come up with this idea that he said, let's get, I don't know if you know Margaret Thoreau out of Canada, and the Bush brothers, and get them together on a team. Oh, who does he want to sponsor him? He had this whole thing laid out and stuff, and I'm thinking, boy, that's a heck of a good idea here.
Really?
Yeah.
I missed that.
Yep, Kyle and Kurt on the same NASCAR team, and then Thoreau running trucks and some occasional nationwide stuff. I guess she's a pretty tough racer, and she's got some pretty big credentials behind her. She's also an ex-Hawaiian Tropic bikini model.
Really?
Yeah. She's a very pretty young lady, but she can wheel a race car and take no quarters up there.
She needs to be our interview list in the near future because God knows we're going to be doing a lot of them here coming up.
Well, I'm sure she's got, I don't know, 24 PR people since she's been in the modeling business forever. You probably have to go through 6 layers of trouble just to even sort of kind of get a blink on that one. But we could try it.
All right. Well, hey, let's talk about some of the area stuff going on and below the NASCAR scene, I guess, so to speak. Let's start with ARCA. ARCA's coming down this week, and Chris Buescher just got to finish 12th. He beats Kimmel. Kimmel just couldn't overtake him at the dirt track, and of course it was rained out. But
yeah, completely rained out,
yeah,
and not rescheduled.
Not redoing it, right.
That must have been a mess.
Yeah, and that is pretty bad if you can't get a dirt track going.
Yeah, because dirt tracks, you know, obviously they water the thing down before they even get started, and then they water it in the middle of the night and then iron it out again. So I know there was rain everywhere Saturday night. We were on just the outskirts of it at Winchester, and we caught enough to slow things down by about 5 hours. And we watched a lot of track drying and listened to an awful lot of threats to get cars out on the racetrack to help dry the thing.
Well,
but we were just on the outskirts of that storm.
Right. Well, the last race is coming up at Kansas Lottery 98.9. So be interesting. Chris Buescher, another young kid, man. That's what the Buescher name is really becoming huge in NASCAR.
Well, they're getting better and better all the time.
There.
Yeah. You know, James, we interviewed him a year and a half or 2 years ago, and to be quite frank, and no slam intended, James, if you happen to be listening, when we heard we were going to interview you, we all went, "Who dat?"
Yeah.
Well, we now know who dad is, and that being pretty good.
And we also said afterwards in the conversation between us that the kid's got a future if he drives all right, and look what he's done.
Yeah, drives very well. And gets the job done and doesn't tear equipment up much. Gets caught up in stuff just like anybody who's running up front trying to make a name for himself. But he impresses me. I hope he gets a full-time nationwide ride next year.
Well, again, Kimmel is not going to win his 10th. I think it is now. The 10th title. Brandon Poole was there. Alex Bowman and Hackenbrack. Chad Hackenbrack was up there in 5th. It was pretty good. Got to go to see some of the ARCA events this year, and I think next year is going to be great. They've got some young talent coming through there. You got Chase Elliott. You've got Ross Kenseth. You've got Eric Jones. I mean, there's a lot of 14, 15-year-old kids racing in this series.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? 14, 15-year-old kids. Some of them got to be like 9th grade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't even have a driver's license.
No, I admit I was driving a car before I had a driver's license, but Mom and Dad said, "Oh, no, you're not driving a race car till." Well, I got caught doing something stupid, and they built a race car for me. But I have to tell you that story off the air sometime. But you never heard of kids that young getting in cars. Go-karts, yeah, but cars,
up that
no.
Well.
And doing very, very well. The young guy that almost won Winchester was 14.
He would have been the second youngest by, I think it was 36 days, because Chase Elliott was the youngest to ever win that. But we'll talk about that here in a couple minutes. But, man, Winchester, we got to go down there. You get to not do some, you know, PA work, and we get a little bit of qualifying. We get all the practice done, a little bit of qualifying. Mother Nature decides to take a squirt.
Oh, yeah, and just enough to lose the racetrack. Not enough to be a gully washer, not enough to make mud in the infield, just enough to lose the racetrack. And then it gets to be dark, and you can't tell whether that track's really dry or not.
No.
I mean, in the daytime, you got some great light, but at night, you can't see the light gray from the dark gray that much. And we had cars out there everywhere, every division except the Super Series cars. And nobody wants to do that, and I don't blame them. You're wearing out tires, gas is $8 a gallon, and the only way we could get that track almost raceable is to tell all the drivers you will make at least one lap, or you will be start at the back of the feature that you're scheduled to be in. And that finally got them moving and stuff. And there's one guy that turned 103 laps.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty amazing because he was out there and out there and out there. I'm like, God, man. You know, either he's got a lot of money to burn or he knows he's going to get whooped in the feature anyway, which he did. But, you know, it was amazing to see that happen because you and I talked a little bit about that during the rain delay, why they were trying to do that. And I said and asked you, and I've learned a lot this weekend down here at Winchester, I got to tell you. But I asked you, does the track help reimburse gas? And you say, no, that's why nobody wants to do it. And I don't blame them because a lot of those guys come out there and they've got just enough money to buy enough gas to hopefully finish that race.
Yeah, there was one guy trying to buy gas on a credit card. I guess his regular racetrack takes him. So
right.
He pumped his 20-gallon of gas at $8 a pop. So what's that make it? $160 or whatever that ends up being. And I handed the credit card to the girl, and here come the radio. We got a problem. We got it solved. I mean, they take credit cards up in the front, so they had to march it up front and get it taken care of. But, a lot of guys on shoestrings budgets, and they can't. And I think they were going to throw $100 at the guy who ran 103 laps. We're talking about that up in the tower, and they had the transponders going so they could tell who really did get out and who didn't get out. And there was a big to-do between the modified guys and the street stock guys and the front-wheel drive people and the modified couple of theirs. Series officials didn't think the other guys were doing their fair share, and so we pulled all the transponder records and had them out there, and everybody did a pretty good fair share. And there was a few guys that were overachievers, but everybody went out there in 20, 30, 40 laps. Even Brian Gumbert in that big old junk box of his,
yeah,
he got out there and ran about 30 or so.
Well, you know, the thing was, it was a good learning experience for me, both looking at the operation of the track, but also, you know, I got to spend a lot of time in the infield during those rain delays and learn a lot about how good a camaraderie these racers have and how some of them can be real idiots. But the funny thing I thought about the whole day, and when I look back on it, as you dropped me off at Walmart and I was, you know, driving home from there, and the first thing that popped into my head, I can remember the sheriff, and I don't remember his name, but that's what they call him, the sheriff.
Keith,
who was the track director. Keith, thank you. Mm-hmm. And he came up to me and a couple other guys and said, I had guys calling me on Monday going, there's a chance of rain. Bull crap. So what? It's not going to rain. And sure enough, here it comes.
Yep. Yeah, but the old-time promoters are going to get you at the racetrack and do everything possible to get the race in. There are racetracks that have curfews. They got to keep track of that stuff. Winchester does not. There are racetracks that don't have lights. Winchester not only has lights, they don't have to depend on an electricity company because they got two great big diesel generators to run
right.
those lights. And one wouldn't start. You know, we had trouble getting that thing going. But they can run all night long out there if they want. And they tried because I talked to somebody, and they said they didn't get that street stock feature done until 2 o'clock in the morning.
I was going to say, we left it a little after 1.
Yep,
and
1:03.
They were getting
clock.
Ready to start that. But the cool thing, I want to thank, you know, the families of Hope and Josh Timmerman and that crew, man. I mean, you know, it was Craig Bontrager and him and Tommy Cook and some of those other guys over there. We ended up, and I've seen some creative stuff in my day, but somebody had, you know, the stress balls where you squeeze, you
mm-hmm.
know, to try to relieve stress. A couple of those popped out, and they were throwing it around. Next thing I know, I see Tommy Cook go over to Josh Timmerman's jack, starts taking apart. Next thing I know, we're playing jack baseball.
Yeah, with a jack handle. Well, you don't want him to throw that bat. You will definitely be upset when you catch that baby in his shin one time, won't you? Now,
well,
were they trying to hit the ball into the stands? Is that what the deal
no,
was?
No. We were in turn two, in the middle of turn one and turn two.
Yeah.
And by the time it was over, Tommy Cook was the only one swinging. And it was quite funny because by the time it was over, it was up to $50 if he could hit the track. But now you're talking about a soft, smushy ball that you can squeeze.
Oh, yeah.
Is not going to fly. Plus, you got all the rain and the wind going on. But I got to tell you, it was tremendous. Not only was it funny, but I was shocked at how many people came and just watched that whole fiasco.
Oh, yeah. Well, you're bored. You got to do something. Man, and it gets silly. I've seen a lot of crazy stuff at rainouts. And we missed a chance to get you in a truck out on the racetrack.
Yeah, well,
yeah. They called for cars, and I was at the wrong spot at the wrong time, and then they shut the gate, and I thought, oh, rats, man. We could have got Cliff in the avalanche and scared the poo right out of him, and I'd have even paid to have professional cleaning out of the seats for that.
I was
going to
say, if I remember right, you said, Cliff, go get the truck and run around the track. I'm like,
yeah.
No.
Come on.
I said, I'll wreck it. And you said, I don't care. It's got insurance on
That's
it.
That's right. I'll tell my insurance guy.
So I should have said, yeah, I'll do the lower part, but I was not going to go up against the wall.
Oh, you get braver and braver as you get out there.
If it was my vehicle, I have no problem. Yours, I got a problem.
I've got brand new tires on it, man. You're good. It had great grip. You got some Michelins on there that will blow right through the water.
Let's talk about one of our good friends, Steve Minnick Sr.,
yes.
Crew chief for KC Spillers, wins a sportsman Super Series championship,
mm-hmm.
but not before there was only like 3 cars left that were not damaged in that whole thing.
What a mess, huh? Yeah, Charlie Hanna got a little bit sideways. He's trying to come through the pack, clipped the 23B car, I can't remember who it was, and everybody just stacked up behind him.
What a Van Meter, wasn't it?
Yeah, one of the Van Meter cars, and Tommy Cook's car is destroyed, Jason Timmerman's car is destroyed, and that's pretty typical of Winchester. You've got to be careful and watch your P's and Q's, and you have to be passive-aggressive down there. I mean, if you can't, if you're not aggressive, you get blown away, but if you're passive, it's even worse. So you got to find that right balance when you're coming through traffic. You got to have a little bit of patience and stuff, and they just didn't have it, and my gosh, you know, I know Josh's car is really bad, and then Cook's car dumped a bunch of fuel on the track. We had to clean that mess up. Had three wreckers for 10 cars. Took forever to clean the thing up.
About an hour.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know what? It was good racing. It was one of those things where you're coming around turn one, and there's not a doggone thing you can do about it because the two guys in front of you are gone. And when I went down and looked at that carnage, and I was standing right there, I was like, my God. And everybody got out safe. I don't know how, because a couple of them cars were pretty ringed up. As a matter of fact, I thought the ambulance was going to take Tommy Cook for a minute.
Well, he get his bell rung, did he? Well, we got to get him checked for a concussion.
All right, folks, we need to take a break. When we come back, Kenny coming out with his Do You Know.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, you forgot?
No, not really. I have two.
Need to take a break.
Over the course of history, there have been many great revolutions. The French Revolution, the American Revolution, the Cuban Revolution, and now in 2012, there's a brand new revolution for the Fan Revolution, IndyProSports.com. That's IndyProSports.com. Indy Pro Sports is for the serious Indiana fan who roots for the Colts, the Pacers, the Indians, and so much more. Make sure you check out IndyProSports.com. Be a part of the revolution on Twitter, Pro Indy, and on Facebook, Indy Pro Sports.
My monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle.
Welcome back to Speed Talk with Kenny Barr, Cliff Tanner, and Tiny Behind the Board, and our good buddy Tom the Dennis Hermy.
Wolf, Hermy!
Who joined us in the studio today. Short story behind that. We'll talk about that later some other time. But we got the whole crew here. Thanks to everybody for that. But we'll get into that a little bit later. Kenny.
Yeah.
It's that time, man. You're going to have to stop laughing because you're on the spot.
I don't care.
It's Do You Know time.
Do You Know. Hey, this week's Do You Know, again, brought to you by wishforourheroes.org, helping military families, active military families, in the Continental 48 and four other countries, according to our friend Jeff Wells. Check them out. See what you can do to help at wishforourheroes.org. This week's Do You Know, Cliff, you have a choice.
All right.
You have a choice between, do you know the difference between wedge and stagger and what they do to a race car, or the legend of Blackjack Boggs?
Wow, that's a tough one, man. You know, we've been talking a little bit of the workings of a car today, but I want to hear Blackjack Boggs.
All right, Blackjack Boggs was a really, really good dirt racer down in Kentucky. Won four to five hundred dirt races. I think he's got a son that's actually racing and stuff now too. But he met his demise at the ripe young age of about 49 years old, if I remember right. This falls under the guise of don't mess with a monkey shouldn't mess with another monkey's monkey kind of thing. He was dating a guy's ex-wife.
Uh-oh. this is not going to end well.
Yeah, it doesn't end well. It ends in Black Jack Boggs being dead. But they were fooling around at the racetrack, and everybody knew what was going on there. And he showed up at the trailer one night to pick up his girlfriend, and the ex-husband come out the door. So he jumped back in his truck to take off, and this guy started blasting him in the truck. Shot him a couple of times, and he just kept on driving. He's so tough, he took a bunch of bullets, and took him 3 days to find him. He ended up driving in the backwoods and ended up dying over a gal. But the reason I tell the whole story, and it's kind of funny, they still have the truck with the bullet holes, and they still drive her around today.
Again, only in Kentucky.
Only in Kentucky. And, hey, don't mess. A wise monkey, that's it. A wise monkey doesn't monkey with another monkey's monkey.
Well, you know, that's kind of interesting. Wow, track lizards, I swear. It's crazy.
You want to do the other one, too?
Yeah, go ahead.
We got time.
Let's fire it all up.
Because that was kind of quick. And there's other parts of that story that I can't confirm, so I decided not to go there. But the difference between wedge and stagger.
Well, that's why it's called a legend, Kenny.
Well, yeah, but it could almost turn into
a
lawsuit when you start telling some of the stories I heard about that thing.
All right, go ahead.
Wedge, you've heard the expression, wedge in a race car. Wedge really isn't any big scientific change. You know that when you make a spring shorter, you make it stiffer, right?
Okay.
Say yes.
Yes.
Okay. Now, you've seen these jack screws that they stick a big wrench in the back of the window and turn two screws down or two screws up to make that spring stiffer or shorter? Say yes. No.
Yes.
Okay, very good. That changes the way the car sets. And the car never sets level. You've seen the cars. This isn't that funny. This is serious technical stuff, man.
I'm sorry.
That's okay. It's good. You're getting me to giggle. Anyway, the car changes angle. You've seen how they look like they're dog tracking or they never set level.
Right.
Well, when you change that, the level of the car, that's what they call wedge. You know, instead of the left front being low and the right rear being high, if you go down on that right rear a little more, that left front's going to come up.
Okay.
That's wedge. Stagger is the difference in the circumference of tires on the rear. If I had one of those styrofoam cups, it'd be a great demonstration. But the left rear is always smaller in circumference than the right rear.
Right.
And this is radio, and I'm talking with my hands again. Isn't this wonderful? But cars have different stagger for different racetracks. So if you lay that white styrofoam cup down and roll it, and what's it do? It goes in a circle. Well, that's the theory between stagger. Now, some dirt cars go as much as 6 inches difference. That's a huge difference. That car will turn on a dime because the left rear is spinning harder and digging harder. And other cars, you only want a half inch or three-quarter of an inch stagger. So when you hear that on NASCAR Live or when they're doing a race somewhere and they say they put a little wedge in the car, they took a little wedge out, or the stagger's probably not right on that set of tires, now you know what they're talking about. They're always trying to make a car handle a little bit better.
Now, is that because of the conditions of the track, or is it a condition of who the driver is, or is it a little combination of all of it?
Yes, and the weather, and the abrasiveness of the track, and the quality of the tires. There are some gizmos out there. And our friend Bob Kohlmeyer showed up with one a couple, 3 weeks ago out at our local track and walked out to the track and pointed it like an infrared thermometer. And he looked at it and said, "You're supposed to have 2 3/4 inch stagger on this track. Did you know that?" We went, "Duh. Let's see. We've won championships for 3 of the last 4 years.
Right.
We've won a majority of the features. And guess what? We're at 2 3/4 most of the time, unless the weather's really cold or we got some older tires on the car and we'll change it a little bit." But I don't know how that infrared gizmo ever work, because you drive it different than Laura drives it, different than Tiny drives it, and the Hermie, he probably wouldn't even drive one. So all drivers are different. They want a little bit different feel. But if you get it wrong and you don't have enough stagger, the car's going to head for the wall when you drive into the corner. If you get too much, it's going to be loose, and the rear end's going to want to come out from around you, and you'll just spin out. So it's important to find your balance in your comfort zone and then try and stay in there a little bit.
Great segue going into our next story here. The Winchester 400, you're talking about the makings and the goings-on of a car. Young Kyle Benjamin, the second youngest guy ever, and on a tremendous last lap pass of Ross Kenseth in the third turn, coming into fourth, wins the race, becomes a champion, Everybody's excited. I listened to the race. You listened to the race.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of excitement, a lot of wrecks going on. But, my God, first of all, the most ever 41 cars on a half-mile track. Now, that doesn't sound like much because we know NASCAR does it. But when you got a lot of guys like that and a lot of good driving talent, wow, you're just asking for disaster on top of Mother Nature coming in with lap 26.
That's a scoring disaster, too. It's got transponders are a godsend. I'm glad I wasn't working that day because, oh my, that had been a mess upstairs. But the CRA guys got this thing down. We need to talk to Glenn and RJ sometime down the road and talk about the logistics of putting on a race and how you organize it and how you keep things straightened up and stuff. I think it'd be really interesting to a certain degree. And the pass, although I wasn't there, I can tell you it was a classic. He had to drive into three deep and hard, drift up into Kenseth and bang him a little bit and get Kenseth off his game so he couldn't get in the throttle just as early. 14-year-olds don't know that, but this kid did that.
Right.
And apparently he knows it and beat him by about 10 feet to the start-finish line. But it's a great big butt in this story.
Yeah, there is a big butt. As a matter of fact, it came about 2.5 hours later. Kyle Benjamin was disqualified for a rules violation, and I have lost
rev limiter.
Thank you, the rev limiter.
Mm-hmm.
And they give it to Ross Kenseth. And here we are talking 14, 15, 16-year-olds racing and winning this, but little did I know until today that the winner gets a Winchester shotgun.
Yeah, yeah. So they get one, the run for the gun on Saturday night, too. They get a shotgun.
Did not realize that.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and I hope it's not loaded.
Yes.
Especially at a racetrack because there's always somebody mad at somebody anywhere.
And it's not a felon.
Isn't it? Okay. Not if you shoot somebody at a racetrack?
In the state of Indiana, if you're a felon, you can't own a gun. So I guess
if you're a felon. Oh,
anyway,
okay.
Sorry, just a little bit of tidbit. Did you know?
No. No, I did not know that.
But, you know, great race. Kyle Busch was in it. Came down. Great for Winchester. Didn't even last five laps.
Nope. Maybe got caught six. Up in a melee. They had a great autograph session.
Well, there you go.
But he didn't last very long.
But a lot of good guys were through there. Eric Jones did a tremendous job, and he came up through there. And he was leading for a little bit and looked like he would dominate. You know, boom, gets hit, goes into a crash. There was even one incident where I'm sure it has happened in the past, but I've never actually seen it, where a tire actually got away from one of the pit crews as one, and I think it was Van Meter, was driving down pit road, and the dang thing bounced, came up, hit the back of his car, damaged it, and then came down on his windshield.
Oh, wouldn't that be a dandy day?
Oh, my gosh.
You don't see it coming and ka-thud. You get hit by this big rubber flying, weapon more than anything, I guess.
Well, you know, we're not talking NASCAR people out here that, you know, can get things done in 14 seconds or 13 seconds. You know what I'm saying?
You'd be surprised how quick they do get it done, though. Years ago, they had to do it by hand. I remember Steve Minnick Jr. practicing in our garage. Vern Schrock, another old racer that used to smoke cigars while he raced out of South Bend, was a tough customer on the high banks, asked Steve to be his right rear tire changer way back in, oh golly, I'm going to go 74, 75, and you weren't allowed any air tools at the time. So we rigged up a big four-way lug wrench with a bearing on the back, and we'd snap the nuts loose and then smack it and spin it. And Steve got to we practiced in the garage, and Steve got to the point where he could change the right rear tire in about 16 seconds by hand and get it tight.
Wow, that's amazing. I do want to make a note that Ross Kenseth is only the second person ever to win the Winchester 400 and the All-American 400 in the same year. And it was done by the great Butch Miller, who I believe has, three or four? If I remember right, I think he has three or four. Doesn't he have three or four championships?
An old ASA champion. Dabbled in NASCAR a little bit. He also won the Red Bud 300 in Anderson this year,
right,
which is like a trifecta in this area for big, big races. I think Red Bud's run in May, the All-American run a week before Winchester, and it's really hard to do all three, and Kenseth has swept it, and that's hard to do.
And that was another thing I learned. You know, he is the 19-year-old son of Matt Kenseth, as you know, or if you don't know, now you do. But he wasn't very well liked by other racers down there in the pits. It was quite interesting to hear the talk about Ross Kenseth.
Yeah, jealousy.
That's what I'm figuring.
Happens all the time. You know, if Chase Elliott was winning all the time and his dad wasn't hanging around, they'd be bad-mouthing him too. But Ross is winning. Chase isn't winning as much this year, so they'll leave him alone. And they're always going to pick on a winner.
Yeah, they're always going to do that. And it was a great show, and I want to thank Kenny, you, and the crew down at Winchester for letting me get behind the scenes on some of that stuff. It was interesting, and I've actually caught myself now starting to watch driving styles and who's drifting, who's actually driving up into corners, and it's all your fault, man.
Yeah, I know it. And then you get to hear all those crazy stories about, oh, yeah, we better not tell them.
Yeah,
about
we
crazy
can't do
people.
That right now, right?
Rain offs are a wonderful thing to hang around.
Well, as always, it comes to an end. Don't forget, RadioSpeedTalk.com. Go to Facebook.com/RadioSpeedTalk. KennyBar52 and RadioSpeedTalk2 on Twitter. And, guys, I want to thank everybody again with Tiny behind the board checking it out, trying to make us look good, or sound good, I should say. Nobody can make us look good. We're screwed on that part.
No.
Which is why we'll never have the webcam in the studio. So.
Oh, geez. You don't have a webcam, do you?
Yeah, but anyway, Tom Wolf, want to thank him. Kenny Barr, Cliff Tanner. We're going to have to boogie on out of here, folks. Until next week, you've been listening to Speed Talk. See you then.
Join us next week for The Balance. In the meantime, check us out on Twitter, T-Balance, or Facebook, The Balance, or online at www.thebalanceonline.com.